You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball.
Welcome to this edition of the U Talk podcast. As always, I'm Grant Bagby.
Howdy, everybody. Joseph Silverzweig. How are you doing on this gloomy January day?
Dude, it is raining.
Yeah, it's
in January.
Gloomy and drizzly, and I'm having soup for dinner tonight. I don't know about
Can
you.
Can I tell you, people in Utah,
you can tell me
rain scares them.
Yeah, they drive so weird.
It's so interesting. Being from the East Coast where all it does is rain, that's the only inclement weather we
get.
3 feet
of snow, yeah, you know, just drive. Wipers will get it. A little bit of rain, everybody freaks out.
Yeah. Well, welcome to this week's episode, trying to bring you weekly episodes, even though football has ended, which is what most people are looking for. But guess what? We're talking plenty of football today.
There's tons to talk about, and there's other sports, and being a Ute fan is good all the year round.
That's true. But before we get started, always remember, we're looking for feedback. Contact me via Twitter. You can DM me directly, follow me or whatever, tweet at me, do the show Twitter feed, which is at Ute Talk Podcast, and then also email us at utetalk@gmail.com. And then if you can give us 5 stars, hey, that helps us. There are algorithms that determine how many people see
people
our show.
And there are people out there who are like, I need a Ute podcast, and they type in Ute podcast. And if you're giving us reviews, they'll find us, and they'll listen.
That's true.
And we don't want to be podcasting into the void. We want to be podcasting into your ears.
That's right. Well, so going into the show, we're going to do our quick hitters, talk about the schedule, a couple other short notes, and then get into football. We've got the OC hire finally happen, offensive coordinator coming in, expectations to talk about, and just other what our concerns might be for the upcoming season versus what this team's ceiling might be.
Are we going to win 15 games or 14 games? That's my concern.
Wow, starting early, Joseph.
Bumping it up.
Then we're going to talk a little bit of basketball and a lukewarm weekend they had. But starting off, let's talk about what's coming up on the schedule. So both basketball teams will be playing Colorado this weekend. The women on Friday against Colorado. The
women have only lost one game. If you guys aren't following these ladies, I don't know what you're doing. Like, there's not exactly a ton going on in Utah sports right now, and they are awesome. Are they ranked yet? They weren't ranked at like 16-1, which is ridiculous.
I do not see any rankings.
Look it up. So keep talking. I'll look up the women ranked.
Sure. But nonetheless, so we've got that. We've got some women's swimming and diving. I guess it's women's and men's swimming and diving. They're in L.A. I'd rather be there. But going against UCLA tomorrow. The skiing's going on in Bozeman, Montana. So there's that. Let's see what else other the Olympic sports are going. Oh, guess what? Track and field is starting up in Boise, Idaho on the 19th. That does not sound fun to me.
Oh,
but
my gosh. The 19th of February.
January.
January.
19th of January in Boise.
Oh, gosh.
I hope that's indoor.
I have no idea what day it is. Okay.
Sierra, what else we got? Men's tennis, Weber State. Women's tennis, Utah State. So there's a bunch of tennis. And then the gymnastics team gets started with Pac-12 play. They're playing Oregon State on the 19th at 3 p.m. in Corvallis. The other fun thing to know about the gymnastics team is they took out BYU last week in the rivalry match. And my favorite part of that was Kim Tessin quoted Zach Moss's tweet about 8 in a row and said something along the lines
of,
it
was just 40.
Yeah.
Just 4-0.
Oh, it was just it?
Yeah.
Great. So in case you didn't know, the gymnastics team has been BYU's gymnastics team 40 times. And now I guess we can start tweeting hashtag 41 is coming.
Yep. That's a wild streak of dominance.
That is
crazy.
And
it's not surprising because it's a totally different category of sport for these two.
It's still pretty crazy.
Although the scores were closer, it was a really good run by BYU in that gymnastics meet, and a lot of very frustrated gymnastics fans about the scores the Utes were getting, the Red Rocks were getting, were really low, even though they shouldn't have been. So there was some scandal, although the Utes still came away with a W.
Either way, Utes won. And I don't even think those scores were going to contribute to the regional qualifying score, the RQS, which is what really matters for gymnastics, in case you didn't know.
No, we're not there yet.
But we're not there yet. So, all right. Now that we got through that, it's time to talk some football. So, as we discussed last week, as we said that we think it's going to be Ludwig.
We were right, as was everybody. I mean, we didn't have the scoop here. Everybody thought it was going to be Ludwig, and it was.
It is.
Hi, Andy.
Yes, Andy, we know you're listening.
He is. He loves media. He really, this is a joke because he really doesn't. He like hates interviews and that whole shtick. He just likes to work.
Yeah.
So, and that's always been true of him.
I honestly don't blame him. But nonetheless, he's hired. So your thoughts?
So it's interesting because I would say the Utah reaction, fan reaction, has been pretty tepid. Like, not negative, but sort of unenthusiastic. And I did a little thought exercise. Well, let's say his name is Randy Sudwig, and he coached Kellen Moore at Boise State before he went to Wisconsin, where he coached Melvin Gordon, and then a sort of also ran SEC team and improved their offense by a touchdown a game while he was there. You'd be like, what? We got an SEC offensive coordinator who's coached spread offenses and teams similar to where Utah was. This is an awesome, awesome, awesome hire. But because he coached Brian Johnson at Utah instead of somebody else somewhere else, there's a sense of retread to it that I think makes people feel frustrated. But it is a great hire. I mean, objectively, it's as high level of an offensive coordinator talent as we could hope the Utes to get. I mean, there's nobody. The only better offensive talent in terms of getting an offensive coordinator would be hiring somebody away from an elite Power 5 school, and that's not a reasonable expectation given Utah's budget, right? They're not going to hire the offensive coordinator at Oregon or Texas Tech to be their offensive coordinator. They'll hire them maybe to be, you know, a head coach, but that would be unusual too. So this is just as high level a hire as they could possibly have made. And yeah, he used to coach for Whittingham for a couple of years, but it's still a very, very good hire.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was interesting listening to Whittingham's interview with Bill Riley, in which he said that, look, we've been talking over the years and the timing just hasn't worked out for Ludwig to come back sooner. But this is a different type of hire for Utah fans in all of the hires that Whittingham's done, in the sense that it's an experienced OC outside of Norm Chow, right? Like, no offense to Troy Taylor, but he was coaching high school, did a season at
FCS
level, and then came to Utah.
And other guys were either promotes within the program,
right,
or you pick up. So, like, Dave Christians was a head coach at Wyoming.
Yep.
But not a already established Power 5 offensive coordinator. This is the first time that's happened.
Except Norm Chow, which was kind of a different vibe. And the Norm Chow, Dennis Erickson stuff was a little different because they were sort of pre-retirement, almost emeritus hires, right?
Yeah.
It had a different vibe to it.
But the interesting thing with Norm Chow, though, and this is why – and I'll have to give some of my thoughts. So let me back up here. So when I first thought and saw Andy Ludwig is going to be the offensive coordinator, I was like, ugh. And you guys heard my reaction last year or last week when I was like, well, all I remember from his offenses were that the games were close, and the only time the offense did really well was when they were in a hurry-up, two-minute style offense.
We started
offense
to dig into it a little bit, and it was like, right, oh, actually, there were some good performances in there.
Exactly. And then I started thinking over the week about Norm Chow, right? One of the things I really liked about Norm Chow is, even though that team was not good and had injury issues and whatnot, he still took the talent and molded that offense so that they could succeed.
The offense was not good the year he was the offensive coordinator, but it was as good as it could possibly
be.
The talent level was so abysmally low because of injuries.
Exactly. And so my point is that this is the first time I feel we've had an offensive coordinator who's an experienced play caller, who I actually have the expectation that coming into the season, he can take this offense, take the players that we have, and actually mold the game plans and everything associated with that to the strengths of our talents. Where I don't know how much of that Troy Taylor was.
Troy Taylor wanted to do his thing. He had a piece of art and that he felt in his playbook and his offensive system, and he wanted to install that. And Ludwig's not that guy. I mean, and you can see it in his career. He went from Utah, where he was coaching Brian Johnson and 5'8" to 5'10" wide receivers and a slow but game running back and Matt Asiata to a very impressive total spread kind of thing. I mean, it was as pure a spread as you can possibly get with the Utah's offense in 2008. And then he went over to Wisconsin, where he had 2 4-star running backs and a 2,000-pound offensive line and tight ends coming out as you know what.
And he coached a pure pro-style, downhill, 3 yards in a cloud of dust offense. And Melvin Gordon got like 2,500 yards. So what I like about this hire is success running the spread, success running a pro-style run-first offense. And then at Vanderbilt, I wouldn't say he's been successful. You can look at his stats and you can see he hasn't scored a ton of points. But he has changed the way SEC defenses handle Vanderbilt, and now they feel they have to handle Vanderbilt. They don't just have to show up. And he has added about a touchdown in their average points if you go back a little bit past before he was there. That's great, and they've got some decent players. There's a huge talent gap between Vanderbilt and the rest of the SEC. So I think you have to take with a grain of salt his lack of point scoring and the Vandy. But if you do a list of Vanderbilt's like S&P plus offenses and Utah's S&P plus offenses, the high points for both of those teams since S&P plus came out is while Ludwig was there. I mean, he can score points. And he doesn't do it in a special way, and he's not cool, and it's not necessarily flashy or like fun to talk about. You're not going to get a Sports Illustrated article about Andy Ludwig's offense. But the Utes will win a Pac-12 championship, and we don't care if we get a Sports Illustrated article about the offense, if we get a Sports Illustrated article about the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to care about the offense as long as it's scoring enough points and the Utes are winning games.
And I think factored in a little bit to Zach Moss's decision-making process. I think it's fair to say at this point, now that the dust is settled, that Zach Moss was considering leaving. And one of the factors was, am I going to have an offensive coordinator who's going to give me 15 or 20 carries a game, or am I going to have an offensive coordinator who's happy to give me 25 or 30 if I'm putting up the yards? And this guy, Ludwig, will give Zach Moss as many carries as he can possibly handle because he's the best player on the team.
See, if I'm Zach Moss, though, isn't that a double-edged sword?
It totally is.
And so, like,
but you only get one contract, maybe two contracts as a running back anyway. So you just want to get drafted as high as possible, get that signing bonus and guaranteed money, and put it in car dealerships or stocks or something like that, and retire early. I mean, really, it's not a good career path. So it's all about getting drafted for a running back.
Right, and I see that. Look, the fact is while at Wisconsin, he had an amazing running back in Melvin Gordon, I believe it was, and he did a great job with him, and he did well with Utah's running backs. And so, sure, it's good for Zach Moss. I really hope – I mean, it should be part of his decision-making, but it should not be that high of a priority in Zach Moss's decision-making. For me, I mean –
No, I think, and the key thing for Zach Moss was his leg wasn't all the way healed, and he didn't think he was going to run a sub 4.5 40. I mean, that was
It was totally
that was the number one thing for him is, if I'm going to run a 4.4 something, I'll go. If I'm going to run a 4.5 something, I won't. And it was that simple. But yeah. I do think that there were other factors. And
agreed. I mean,
his education was a legitimate factor. Making his family happy was a legitimate factor. His high school relationships and the trio is a legitimate factor. And I think being confident that he was going to be in an offense that was going to maximize his talents and maximize the chance of him
because you come back, and he said this, but I think when you come back, when you're a guy like Zach Moss, it's because you want to do something special.
Right.
And it doesn't even have to necessarily be winning the Pac-12, but he wants to set records. He wants to be somebody that in 10, 20 years we're going, man, Zach Moss, just like we do with Jamal Anderson, mm-hmm. you know. And to do that, he needs to get the carries. And so I think that is a fair consideration. And it's not like he waited and Troy Taylor wasn't coming back, so he decided to come back. It wasn't that kind of thing, but it was a factor.
No, I'm sure it was. I mean, it's interesting. So let's just talk about that, right? So news came out. I don't know that we touched about it a lot last week, but pretty much all of the juniors you would expect to go pro are coming back.
Everybody.
Everybody.
It's loaded. Julian Blackman. But it's the whole team is loaded.
Yeah. So this brings to the next part of this is, what are our expectations? What is the ceiling for this team going into the off season that we're now hitting? Now, granted, I will put this caveat out there, and we haven't discussed it much, but there's potential in my mind that maybe Harding leaves, having not got the OC position, and then we're rebuilding or hiring a new offensive line coach.
So he interviewed for a job with Cleveland Browns. Harding did.
Right.
And I think he was offered that job, and he would have taken it if he was leaving. I think I would expect this to be his last year, unless he gets a significant promotion, because he's highly in demand, particularly at the NFL level. I mean, they keep drafting his players, and they want him to coach their players. He's 7-8 guys drafted in the last couple of years. It's remarkable. And NFL scouts and GMs are intrigued by his ability to coach linemen. So he's going to leave sooner or later, and I think it would have been to the Browns, and it wasn't. So now it'll probably be after this year, after he puts a few more linemen in the NFL and raises his profile a little bit. Do you actually want me? I don't know if I can say my expectations. Everybody's going to get mad at me. Of course, they got mad at me last year because the Utes started 2-2, and I told them, oh, the Utes are going to win 9 or 10 games. And guess what? They did. Because I'm right, and I usually know what I'm talking about.
Well,
so no, here are my expectations.
Off-season expectations.
Utah was a top 15 team in this last year. They didn't get a top 15 record because they had one of the top 5 hardest schedules in the entire country. Next year, I expect them to improve in all phases, except at linebacker, but to improve enough in the other phases of the defense that the run defense is going to be better, not worse, and the pass rush is going to be better, not worse. And I don't anticipate much of a linebacker fall off because there's so much talent. So I expect them to improve in all phases and to be a top 10 team. And they are playing a top 30 schedule. So I'm expecting a Pac-12 South championship and to be favored going into the Pac-12 title game. And I think it is legitimate to hope for a playoff berth for the Utes. Not a playoff victory, not a national championship, because they're not going to be on the level of the best teams in the country. But because the schedule is soft but doesn't look soft, I could see them easily getting to 11 or 12 wins on the season, or 13, getting into the playoff. I don't think they're going to be a 35 points over average team like Clemson or Alabama, but I think they could be on the level that Notre Dame and Oklahoma were this year.
Yeah, I mean, look, their expectations are definitely a Pac-12 title. Like, look,
I think that's where it should be.
Right? They won the South. And there's no reason they shouldn't win the South again.
And then
again,
you think about who pushed on them and who gave them trouble, and they're all getting worse. Oregon lost their best offensive player in Mitchell, the wide receiver.
Yep.
ASU is losing their quarterback and their star wide receiver. Arizona's not getting better. UCLA is in shambles. USC is in shambles. And they play them early in the year because Cliff Kingsbury's not – I mean, it's a mess over there.
It is.
Utah's putting together a closing really strong when recruiting right now.
We've got one other thing to talk about with football. We'll get to this, the Cam Rising stuff. And they just should be far. Washington losing a bunch of talent, both offense and defense. Utah should win this conference.
Well, and look, they're
the best team, and they should win.
You look at the schedule, and they're going to win their out of conference. Then you get into conference play, and they start at USC, and then home against Washington State. There's no reason not to like them in those games. Then you have this four-game stretch after a bye: Oregon State, Arizona State, Cal, Washington, right? You're going to win 3 out of 4 of those games easy.
Yeah,
right?
There's no reason not to. You're looking for losses, and you're like, I mean, somebody's probably going to beat them because it's hard to win every game.
It's hard to be perfect.
But they're far and away the best team.
Yeah, and then you look – I'm just sorry. I'm continuing this, but yeah. UCLA at Arizona, Colorado. Those are three wins.
Those are the games. Where are the losses?
One loss, maybe. But as you just said, they're Washington's losing talent too.
And they'll be a head scratcher, right? Because there always is, and that's the nature of football. Is Utah's going to show up and play a bad game, and their opponent's going to show up and play a good one, and it'll be on the road, and they'll lose. That'll probably happen at least once, and maybe twice, but it might not.
I don't know that it will. But look, we'll see. But it's hard to find losses. And then you get really excited, right?
Because now you're like, wait, okay, can I really start talking about 11 or 12 wins and going into the Pac-12 championship game undefeated, a top five team? Yeah, you can.
It's not illogical.
You can legitimately hope for that. I would set your expectations.
Scares the bejesus out of me.
Right? You don't want to get that far. But my honest-to-goodness expectation for regular season wins for the Utes is 11. And if they got less than 10, I would be disappointed.
Wow. I mean, that's clearly winning the Pac-12 South. No doubt.
I mean, it would take a...
They're winning the South at that record.
And then you're looking at a coin flip in the championship, just like the game against Washington was. There's going to be random bounces that decide that game. Likely is not. There's a chance that Utah will be far and away better than their opponent in that game, but probably not enough that a fluky touchdown wouldn't decide it. And you just have to hope that the bounce goes the Utes' way this time.
True.
But if they have 11 or 12 wins going into that game, worst case scenarios are really, really fun. So
yeah, no,
it's all good. It's all good.
It's pretty crazy. Yeah. I mean, and then you bring on that effect. All right, so we've hired an experienced OC. We've got a really good coaching staff. The defensive staff's locked down, and we've got all this great talent coming back.
And you're saying to yourself, is this Utah? And now I'm going to add a couple more things to this. Is this Utah? ! Feeling that you're having. Utah's on their way to flipping a 4-star running back commit from USC because Utah's a better place to go play for this guy, and he's really, really good. He's the real deal. Utah lost a 4-star quarterback recruit to Indiana. Sorry, Indiana. And it looks like – and so it's interesting. Texas has decided that Cam Rising, 4-star quarterback out of the Longhorns quarterback who's transferring, will transfer to Utah, take a redshirt year, be eligible in 2020. Nobody at our end has heard that yet. So grain of salt on that, although you would think the guys at Texas would actually be a little bit more plugged in and would have better relationships with his family and friends. So I think that's a really, really good sign. But Cam Rising is every bit as good of a prospect as Jack Tuttle is. And better in that we know – I can't remember the name of the Texas QB, but he's a very, very good player. And so when you're talking about data points, remember when Cooper Bateman was coming over and I said, look, the only data point we have about Cooper Bateman is he was the 4th best quarterback on Alabama. We know that Cam Rising was the 2nd best quarterback on Texas, and we know who their other quarterbacks were, and they were pretty darn good. So he's a legit prospect. He's probably going to edge out Jason Shelley for the backup and may push Huntley for the starting job. Although this would be in 2 years. He's not eligible next year because it's not a graduate transfer.
He's not going to be pushing Huntley for his starting
job. No. So I'm misspeaking.
Yeah, he will be. I mean, look, it's going to be a competition.
Yeah.
And look, Shelley's going to have an advantage in that he's got a heck of a lot more game experience mm-hmm. and has done. I mean, look, when he
much
took
better
over,
arm on rising.
He did good.
Yeah. Well, almost up until the last game.
Well, sure. Look, he's still a freshman.
Yeah.
Like people need to remember that.
Yeah.
Like,
no, he's. But, it'll be an interesting battle.
Yeah, it's interesting because we bring up freshmen, and I know there's so. Is there any more excitement? Because I want to transition to basketball.
Well, it's not even the excitement. It's just the point that I want to make that this kind of is this Utah feeling, oh, my gosh, are we really legitimately talking about 10, 11, 12 wins in the regular season, is backed up by this sense of reloading. Oh, we lost linebackers. Oh, we'll get a graduate transfer from Penn State. Oh, we lost a quarterback. Oh, we'll get a guy from Texas, 4 stars. That's fine. And that sense of reloading and not missing a beat is also kind of in the same vein, I think, in terms of the feel of this program having changed.
It's got some momentum, serious momentum.
And I honestly think that we owe Troy Taylor credit for that. Because of the way the offense changed. And some of that's on Harding, according to people who have, you know, a lot of relationships in this program and how he schemed the run game and things like that. But something has changed in the last 2 years about the way this team thinks about itself, and in particular about the way the offense thinks about itself as an element of the team that wins football games. And there seems to have been a cultural shift from you know what marks it? What marks it is Coach Whittingham's halftime speech at Oregon when we beat him by 400 points, where he said, this isn't David and Goliath anymore. This is two giants going at it. And that's the moment, I think, where you say this narrative has changed and this is a new university and a new football program. And we're seeing now a national perception that Utah will not just hang around, but be favored to dominate the conference.
Yeah, and also the other thing that I feel has changed is, to me, it just seems like the players are having more fun.
Yeah,
I mean, they went shirtless out in Colorado. Shelley and TJ Green getting up into the muss when they beat BYU. Like, these are just things you didn't see the team do before. It was much more professional. We're here to get a job done. This is business, yada, yada. And now it's like, oh, wait, we're actually playing a game that we love to play. Let's have some fun with it, too. And that's a big deal.
Where do you think that comes from? Because I agree totally with that. And it's like watching the national championship and watching Clemson and Alabama and the difference between a Nick Saban's like stone cold professionalism and Dabo Swinney's like, we're just having fun out here.
Right.
We just happen to all be really, really good. And how nice that was and how satisfying it is to see the kind of the happy team.
Well, it makes
win.
You want to cheer for them.
Yeah. Too. It's like, you know, it's like the, I don't know if you guys are fans of Kung Fu movies, but there's like this happy warrior thing. It was kind of a
silly guy. Usually he's drunk and he'll have a bunch of jerks go fight him. And he's like stumbling around. But as he's stumbling around, he's beating up all of these bad guys. And it's that same kind of feel of almost the joy makes you more powerful and makes it more fun for the observer. But where do you think that comes from? Do you think that's because not Coach Troy Taylor is not, you know, fun-loving, happy guy. Certainly Kyle Whittingham's hasn't changed his approach, and he's a
but apparently it has.
Intense soul. But the joy, I mean, does it come from Huntley? Does it come from the trio, the Hallandale trio, and that sense of
camaraderie
and friendship that they brought with them from being in high school? And I mean, you see the same thing. I guess you got Shelley and Dixon, that same kind of because they went to the same high school. And I wonder if that doesn't contribute to the joy of it,
because it's easier to remember. Oh yeah, we're kids playing a game
when you're playing it with the same kids you used to play it with when the big lights weren't on and the TV wasn't on.
So I think it's a combination of things. I think watching Dabo and those guys having fun is influential. But I think it's coming from the players. I think it's coming from the captains. I think the Hollandel trio, I think you're right, it's having part of that impact. But here's the thing. I'll relate it to basketball. That's my sport, right? Basketball, you get a team of five people together and you have a good chemistry on that team. You're going to have a lot of fun. The ball's going to be moving amongst everybody. Everyone's going to be doing what they do well. And it's going to be a lot of fun, right? Well, then you get this team and the camaraderie, and it seems like they're building some chemistry. I mean, look at Zach Moss and all these juniors that are coming back for their senior year. That's part of it is because of the chemistry.
Right, because they're having fun.
Yeah.
Right? Zach Moss is like, yeah, I could make $1 million, but I'll probably make $1 million next year. And this is fun. I'm having a blast. I want to keep having fun. And I think you're right. I think that contributes to the decision of all these guys.
I mean, Lekki Fotu's draft position is not going to change.
You know, everybody knows what he is, and he's remarkable.
Right.
Julian Blackman can probably improve his draft stock, so that was a smart move on him. But a lot of these guys staying, they didn't make money staying. I think Blackman and Moss probably will. But, they're staying because they want to stay, because it's fun and because they want to play one more year. And 12 months ago, people close to Lekki Fotu and Julian Blackman, there was no way. They were done. They were bored. They wanted to cash their check. And you know me, God bless them. Go get that money.
Oh, I'm with you.
But you're right. Something changed, and they're like, we've got unfinished business, and I think this is going to be a blast. So let's do it.
Yeah. So along the lines,
what's there? Hashtag. Let's do the damn thing.
Yeah, I think that's it.
I'm liking it. I'm already 100% on board with that.
You know what I really like? The hashtag I like. That has grown on me is the Jazzes, which is team is everything.
Yeah, everybody was so mad because Take Note was like perfect, right? So
well, it's nice and short.
Yeah, and it worked so well for a team that made people stop and go, oh, wow, there's a lot of good players on that basketball team.
Yeah.
And then you were sad when they changed it. You're like, wait, but Take Note, what happened to the Take Note?
Right.
But it works really well.
The team is everything. And then – the one,
especially now that they're winning, it was kind of hard when they were losing a lot, but now that they're winning, it's easier.
Well, and then the other hashtag, and this is just things I think about when I'm thinking about these Utah team and the chemistry, is you got the team is everything. Everyone's ready to play. And then you've got the other part of it, which is one that Utah basketball used a couple years back, which is all in, all together. And I don't know. I would think Utah football might want to borrow that hashtag this coming season.
All in, all together.
Yeah, it's a good one.
It is.
Nonetheless, we should, since we've kind of talked basketball hashtags, we should talk some basketball.
They are playing.
They are playing games.
We're enjoying.
It's not their off season.
No. An entertaining brand of basketball. I'm enjoying watching them.
Yeah, and I think hopefully all of you have lowered your expectations enough to be able to enjoy this season a little bit. However, let's talk about, so I feel like this last week's worth of plays, kind of a lukewarm week. You saw him against Washington, who might be one of the better teams in the conference, who's up to second in the conference with that 2-0 week that Washington had.
And a pretty bad loss there, 16-point loss.
Yeah.
So not good. And it's so few points scored, which is, like looking back, Utah's last... See, going back to Kentucky, going back to Kentucky, Utah scored 61. So that was like their last time they didn't score a bunch of points. After that, 93, 76, 71, 96, 81, and then 53 against Washington. So, yeah.
a frustrating loss of kind of offensive momentum, but then captured it back against a really bad,
admittedly really bad,
really
Washington
bad.
State team, and they scored 88. And there were a stretch there where they were up 20+. I mean, they were just wiping the floor with them all night, which was very satisfying.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm. You could totally put me on repeat here, but you know, DeMarlo Slocum, Coach Slocum, said this on an interview with ESPN 700. Is well, we have some freshmen, and freshmen come in with freshman understanding and freshman knowledge of basketball and basketball IQ, and freshmen are going to continue to make some freshman mistakes. And right now, our most efficient players, Donnie Tillman, Cedric Bearfield, Jace Johnson, three most efficient players. Like, it's showing, the experience is showing as Pac-12 play is hitting. And then you've got Booth Gotch, Timmy Allen, Charles Jones
Boy,
Jr.
Boy, Gotch seems like he's going to be a special kid.
He is. He is going to be special.
What I liked about that Washington State game was I felt like that freshman talent showed out. Mm-hmm. And we were able to come because
there's a gap there, and there's a coaching gap and a talent gap there. We were able to see more flashes of kind of what they're capable of in the long term, and so that made it a fun game for
me. Yeah, and that's the thing, is we need to have patience this year, right? We're going to watch some freshmen make some mistakes. Our experienced players have come to the top. They're our best players. The experience
is
showing.
Cedric Bearfield is hitting his shots, which has totally
changed everything. Totally.
And I told you it was going to happen eventually, because that's how he is.
It just had to happen.
We just kept waiting and waiting and waiting, and pretty much as soon as we hit conference play, he found a stroke again. I guess there was I heard an interview with Larry Kay where there was a break, and he was at home for 4 or 5 days and sat down with his AAU coaches and other coaches from a longer time ago, was talking about his struggles and his experiences. And they said, well, this is what you're doing wrong, and this is what you have to do differently. And it was exactly what the coaches were telling him at the U,
right,
he needed to do differently. But sometimes there's like an almost antagonistic, I think, quality to somebody when you're getting coached, whereas they tell you, here's what you need to change. You're like, don't tell me what to do. I know what I'm doing. I'm just going to keep doing my thing. But then when you hear it from a couple of other people, you go, oh, okay, maybe I actually do need to make those adjustments, and they're working. So
I don't know. That maybe sounds more like a knock on Cedric or his character. I think that's a very natural thing lots of people would do.
Totally.
And I think particularly young people, it's easier to do. And it's just nice to see that he's found his way out of the slump and is knocking down shots and making trouble for Pac-12 teams.
Yeah, no. He's been playing great in Pac-12 play. And it'll be interesting to see. I mean, look, let's continue to ride, right? We got the season. Everyone's going to keep getting better throughout Pac-12 play. If the Utes can stay near the top half and maybe get a first-round bye, it would be preferable in Pac-12 conference title. But maybe they get to the conference title and make some serious noise. I don't know.
I mean,
my expectations are still no.
No, I don't think it's reasonable to set expectations at any kind of sniff at a tournament berth. But there's so few definitely better than the Utes teams.
Right.
And that means that there's only one or two fluky wins that you need to get. I think Arizona State, not even. I mean, Utah beat them and they don't look good anymore. Washington is definitely better than Utah.
Right.
You look around the league, like, is there anybody else who's like clearly head and shoulders above? And I don't see them. Maybe I'm no expert, but I don't really see a team that makes me go, yeah, they're better than Utes.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say.
And so what that means is, sure, they could wind up in the 4 seed or the 3 seed, and you know, then all they need is for Washington to miss a couple threes that they should hit, and Utah to hit a couple threes that they normally miss, and you win a game you shouldn't win.
Well, if anything, you know, I'm kind of hoping we go back. I mean, that Larry Kay can go back to his coaching days early on when I'm blanking out on the players right now, it's annoying me, but they had the run in the conference tournament when they weren't supposed to do crap.
Right.
And it's really annoying me. I can't remember the players' names. But nonetheless, they did that. And that season, I felt like the Utes just got better and better throughout the season.
And you feel like kind of that same vibe here.
I'm hoping that we can continue to establish that vibe.
The first part of the story fits that narrative. It fits other narratives too.
Right.
You know, it could certainly be this turns out to be an inconsistent team, and that's kind of where we are. But it's possible right now. And you're starting to see flashes of, oh, maybe they're actually getting better in a meaningful way. And you know, I find we have this conversation about Chris Kubiak coach teams a lot.
Yes.
Where we're frustrated and we're frustrated and we're frustrated. Like, oh, man, everybody gets better. And that's not something you can say about a lot of basketball teams.
True. Look, all you running Utah fans out there, Utes fans, that want Larry K gone.
And I put him on the hot seat, and I stand by that.
He's still on the hot seat. I totally agree. The fact is we still have to accept the fact that he's under contract until 23.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. But nonetheless, I feel like Pac-12 play, even last week, even though it was lukewarm, still gives us reason to see.
Yeah, there were definitely positives.
It was good.
Good things in there.
Yeah. So nonetheless, keep watching Utah basketball. Tons of good news on Utah football. Gymnastics is 40 in a row over BYU. Things are good in Utah athletics.
Life is good.
Yeah. So look, people, even though it's raining and it's going to snow tomorrow, let's just be happy. And, of course, as always, go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to Ute Talk. Brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter @UteTalk Podcast or email @UteTalk@gmail.com.